News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday right here on News Radio 92.3 or AM 1620, or you're listening on the podcast version of this show whenever you get a chance to listen, wherever you get your podcasts. You can always download the show and listen to it at your leisure. If you're not doing that, I think you should start doing that. In fact, you should listen, you know, multiple times every week, because you could never get sick of the sound of my voice. I know I certainly never get sick of the sound of my own voice. Actually, that's not true. I'm already sick of the sound of my own voice. So let's bring on another voice. Please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Hello, Julio.
Yeah, I'm sick of that
Thanks
voice.
Thanks for having
me. That voice can stop right now.
Oh boy, so many voices you'll never get sick of hearing. Thanks for having me. You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording, and you had mentioned that there was something that you wanted to touch on, but then you kind of held back because you wanted to wait until we got on air to do it. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, I do. We're going to talk today about, Jeremy and I are both big horror movie fans, as you know. You've heard us talk about horror movies a lot on this show. This is looking like another good year for horror. So I had just, we're going to be talking about some of the films we're most looking forward to this year. And there's one in particular I just saw a trailer for that I was going to mention, but I'm gonna hold off on a second before I mention it.
Okay.
Just so far this year, Jeremy, we're almost four months into the year. I can count. What have you seen so far this year, horror-wise, that you were really kind of bowled over by?
Oh, no, I'm so bad about dates that I might need to kind of... Okay, so was Blink Twice and Strange Darling this year?
Strange Darlings was definitely last year. I'm not
okay,
sure.
Okay, I think so I've got to move forward a little bit more.
I mean, I can tell Long you, I can tell you the one that I really loved so far this year is The Monkey, which I don't think we got a chance to talk about on the show at all.
Oh, The Monkey was great. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Fantastic, like, black comedy supernatural horror movie by Osgood Perkins, who is kind of like the up-and-coming horror guy of the moment. Would you think that's fair to say? Between this and Long Legs, and he's got another movie coming out later this year. Is it later this year?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that there's a trailer at the end of The Monkey that talks about that.
Yeah, and the name of it has gone completely out of my head, but if you give me a second, I will come up with that. But man, I just really love this movie. It is so much fun. Like, it really creative kills in this movie that really just have a good sense of humor to them. And Keeper is the name of the other movie that will be coming out later this year.
Okay.
I just thought this movie was a lot of fun. Like, it's one of the most fun horror movies I've seen in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Osgood Perkins is known for movies that are incredibly bleak. Between The Black Coat's Daughter and more recently Long Legs, he has a style. There is a bit of humor in them, but very, very dark humor. I think The Monkey, while it's probably like out and out more gory than his other movies, I think there's a funness to it, and it played really well with an audience. I thought that one was great.
I think that was very much a departure for him. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think the Hansel and Gretel film that he did was like terribly bleak. I thought that was a good film too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think he is, this felt a little less auteur-y and a little more mainstream in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fair critique or point to make about it. And I like that he can kind of operate in both of those wheelhouses, because I do think people might watch his films from a distance. I think this one's a bit more accessible. One that is kind of hovers on the edge of, is it horror, is it sci-fi, what kind of movie is it, is Companion, which starred Sophie Thatcher, who was featured in last year's Heretic. It's also got Jack Quaid, who's in Novocaine, and it's a very, very good movie. I hesitate to call it horror, but there's definitely those genre elements to it.
Yeah, there's two that have come out that I haven't had the chance to see yet that I really do want to see. Companion is one of them. The other is Hard Eyes, which is
I hadn't seen that either.
This rom-com slasher that from everybody that I know that's seen it says it's a lot of fun, and it's a movie that I need to get around to seeing. I miss it in theaters, unfortunately, but been very much forward looking at that. I'm a big fan of horror that crosses genres.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, anytime you can have comedy horror, you know, things like that, I'm here for it. And that's why one of the movies that I think I'm most excited about, and this is the one I was alluding to before we started talking, is a movie called Clown in a Cornfield.
Okay.
And I just saw the trailer for this the other night. I'd been vaguely aware of this existing. There had been some buzz about it out of South by Southwest, and I'd seen a few references to it here and there. But I got a lot more excited about this movie after seeing the trailer. A, because the trailer's hilarious. But B, and more importantly, this is directed by Eli Craig. And my God, it's about time they finally let Eli Craig do another movie. This is the director of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, love that movie.
Which is a fantastic comedy horror movie that I cannot believe that we have not seen a major release from him since then. That movie was 2010. So, I mean, he had another little release in 2017 that didn't really get a whole lot of play, called Little Evil. But, you know, this is his first big theatrical release since Tucker and Dale versus Evil. So that to me is like, all right, yeah, I'm here for it. I'm here all day long for this. And it's apparently based on a YA novel that came out in 2020. It's, you know, kind of the iconic, you know, there's this town where they have this iconic clown and somebody dresses up as the clown and starts killing people. You know, the plot seems very basic, you know, but I mean, you had me at Eli Craig, dude.
Yeah, no, when I pulled up the images for the movie, I'm like, okay, the title doesn't exactly immediately grab me. I mean, there's definitely a little bit of a hook for genre fans there as far as, oh, we've got clowns and cornfields. But then looking at the reviews and seeing that Eli Craig is attached to it, yeah, I'm automatically in, and it is so much goodwill from Tucker Dale versus Evil, which if listeners haven't seen that movie, highly recommend going and watching it. It's very, very funny kind of spin on the rednecks in the woods tropes, and I think similar to The Monkey, definite crowd pleaser.
Yeah, well, and this is based on a novel that won the Bram Stoker Award for the best young adult novel in 2020, so there's a little bit of a literary thing here. And I think also if you go back and if you ever get a chance to pull up the cover of this novel, the whole thing with the layout and the typography and everything, it just looks like an early Stephen King novel. And I'm here for that. Like it's paying tribute to the stuff that has gone before. And I love that kind of thing too. I'm here for something, you know, like Stranger Things is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. That's what this cover looks like. It looks like Stranger Things, but that's what Stranger Things looks like. Stranger Things logo is based on the logo treatment on many of Stephen King's early novels.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's that iconic typography that kind of just looking at something like that, you kind of know what you're getting into already. And I'm a little disappointed that they didn't continue that on the movie poster, but that's okay. And I also love the fact that the clown is named Frendo.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that just makes me think of No Country for Old Men.
Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, Anton Chigurh, exactly. And I'm sure that's not, you know, I'm sure that's at least partially intentional and partially unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, I'm kind of here for it. I, you know, if you're selling me Anton Chigurh as an actual clown, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So I got to say, you know, from coming out of the cornfield, so to speak, this has become one of my more anticipated movies of the year, and definitely one of my more anticipated horror movies of the year. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mm-hmm. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we're talking about the upcoming year in horror movies, some of the stuff that we are most looking forward to this year. We talked a lot about Clown in a Cornfield just before the break. Jeremy, did you have something that you wanted to mention that you're particularly excited about this year?
I mean, there are a few, and I know that we're going to touch on some of them, but one that first popped into my head is going to be Megan 2.0.
Really?
Oh, I love that first movie. Did you see it?
I did. I'm not as hot on it as you are.
So, I get that. I 100% understand. There was something so, like, kitschy and more fun than you would initially expect out of it. There's something also a little bit uncomfortable about it, and I think that that's something that the sequels could explore, if not a spinoff. But I think we all know that if humanoid robots do come on the market soon, they will not be primarily used by children. So there's like that kind of weird thing to it. And I think that all of that stuff's like ripe to explore, because I think it's like very, very close to our like current timeline. But yeah, I thought Megan was fun, and I'm excited to see where they go, and I hope they kind of go in the direction of Smile 2 versus Smile 1, where there was kind of a self-seriousness to Smile 1, and I think it kind of thought it was a little better or smarter than it was, where like Smile 2 leaned in on the elements that I thought were the most entertaining and enjoyable about it and kind of leaned into the absurd. So I think like, I think there's a lot of potential for Megan too. Talk to me. What do you think?
That may be, if that proves to be the case, then maybe I'll be more interested. I was not terribly interested in the first Smile.
Uh-huh.
And you know, from what I've heard, I do need to get around to seeing Smile 2 for the reasons that you cited. If they can do some of the same kind of thing with Megan, then maybe I'll become more interested.
On a scale of 5, what would you rate the original Megan? Just curious.
2.5.
Okay. Yeah. No,
I mean, it wasn't unwatchable. It just wasn't, I think, as smart as it thought it was.
Yeah, I'm not going much over a 3. Maybe I'll say a 3.25 or something that, but we're not far off.
I mean, I do think they created an iconic character.
Yeah.
And I can see the desire to bring that character back. I don't see how that fits into bringing back Allison Williams and Violet McGraw, which they are.
Oh, they're coming back for the season? Yeah. Okay, I see.
So, you know, we shall have to see. We'll see where this goes. It does look, you know, based on the premise, like they've got a different idea here. So that works. So this is the premise, at least according to Wikipedia. 2 years after the events of Megan, Gemma has become an author and advocate for regulation of artificial intelligence. Makes sense. Megan's technology has been stolen and used by a defense contractor to create a spy robot called Amelia, who becomes self-aware and set on AI takeover. Gemma responds by reconstructing an upgraded Megan to fight Amelia.
What?
So the last thing where we're starting to get into, so are Megan is going to be the T-800 to Amelia's T-1000?
100%. That is wild. I love it. It sounds absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It remains to be seen. I will say that the initial teaser trailer does not exactly fill me with confidence. Despite or because of the use of Chapel Roan's feminine nomenon in the little teaser and trying to, you know, reconstitute the whole Megan dance thing that went viral out of the first Megan movie.
Megan is a queer icon. I will not have you besmirch Megan or the Babadook.
That has nothing to do with either. That's another movie that I haven't gotten around to that I really need to get around to is the Babadook.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I've heard nothing but good things about that, and it is a film I definitely need to see. Now, you know, speaking of, though, another film that came up in that same time period, that was another little indie film that kind of came up at the same time period as The Babadook, And I don't know, maybe this isn't coming out this year after all, but I thought it was. Are we not getting the It Follows sequel this year? Is that next year?
Oh, I thought it was this year, but I don't see it on this list that I'm looking at either.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding was that this was like nearly done. Filming is beginning in 2025, so yeah, maybe that's not coming out till 2026. But
They Follow, I believe.
I believe that sounds correct. And of course, we've got Micah Monroe coming back for that, who is fast becoming one of our most valuable modern day scream queens.
Absolutely.
Enjoy her work very much. But yeah, it does look like maybe that is that's still off in the more distant future. I thought for sure that was one we were going to spend some time talking about, because I am excited about that.
I can hit you with the other end of the spectrum, but you give me one
first.
Yeah,
go for it. No, go ahead.
So 28 years later.
Okay.
Director Danny Boyle. We go from something that I do think is almost more jokey, almost more kitschy, to something that I think has a lot of potential to have some kind of social commentary, some cultural relevance. I think when zombie movies are at their best, they can kind of reveal a lot about us and society and all of that kind of stuff. The one uphill battle that this movie has is probably the same that 28 Days Later had 20 some odd years ago, and that is that this genre is so well trodden, and we've got these great shows like The Last of Us that are kind of, you know, working in the same kind of ecosystem as far as like dealing with similar themes and the fallout of society and all of that kind of stuff. But if anybody can do this well, I think that Danny Boyle is the guy for the job. I think the first and second film are just incredible examples of the genre. So I'm looking forward to this one.
I'm a massive fan of Danny Boyle in general. I haven't seen everything he's done, but I've seen probably 80% of what he's done. And I'm a fan of pretty much all the ones I've seen. I'm just looking at the list here, and I think you know, maybe there's one in every four or five that I haven't seen. He did not do the sequel. He did not do 28 Weeks Later, which I haven't seen, and that's where I'm a little bit concerned. I guess I need to get around to seeing that.
It's very good.
Yeah. But I am a big fan of the original, and so I'm looking forward to this with a little bit of trepidation. They shot, just so you know too, they did shoot this back to back with a sequel, so there is already a sequel to this that's called 28 Days Later: The Bone Temple, and that is directed by Nia DaCosta, who did the Candyman revival a couple years ago. And also did The Marvels as a good director in her own right. Both films, though, not just the other thing that I think is exciting about this that I don't think was true of 28 Weeks Later, if I recall correctly, is you've also got Alex Garland back writing this.
Yeah, that's a good asset.
So Alex Garland, who's gone on to be quite a great filmmaker in his own right, and he did, I guess he had an uncredited... he was an executive producer and did an uncredited rewrite on 28 Weeks Later, but he didn't write it.
Mm.
But yeah, you know, this is the director of Ex Machina, Annihilation, and Civil War. You know, he's a great filmmaker in his own right. So to see him coming back to this universe too, he did write the original film as well. It was his first screenplay. That to me makes me a lot more excited about this. And then, you know, you look at the cast: Jodie Comer, Ralph Fiennes, Aaron Taylor Johnson. You know, they're making some effort here. So, I mean, am I saying this is going to be an Academy Award nominee? Not necessarily, but, you know, you've got the talent behind it that, you know, would suggest that, you know, Danny Boyle's an Oscar winner. Garland, I believe, is a nominee, if not a winner. Ralph Fiennes is a multiple nominee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's some prestige here. So that there's some excitement about that, I think. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I don't know, though, Jeremy, I tend to get more excited about the original concepts than I do about the sequels and that sort of thing. I've mentioned this before. I think we did a show where we were talking about just movies in general that we were most excited about. and I may have mentioned this film before, but Sinners. This is this is from Ryan Coogler, who, again, filmmaker who I just love, who I don't think has made a bad movie, teaming up again with Michael B. Jordan, who is a great filmmaker in his own right, but especially when he works with Ryan Coogler, they do some very special things. And this is a supernatural horror film set in the 1930s in Jim Crow, the Jim Crow South. They definitely seem to be playing with some themes about race and about the intermingling of blacks and whites. You've got Haley Steinfeld in this, which is always a win for me. Anytime Haley Steinfeld is in anything, I'm interested in it. But Haley Steinfeld, at least from the trailer, appearing to be a vampire. Yeah, sold. But my understanding is that this gets into more than just vampires. And that the trailers are just scraping the surface on this. I'm very excited for this movie.
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, Michael B. Jordan playing twin versions of himself. It looks almost like a Seas movie also, in the same way of like Assault on Precinct 13 or maybe From Dusk Till Dawn, which I always like that kind of premise. They're trying to get in and we're trying to keep them out. Like you said, a lot of really talented people attached to it. I think that's a good pick.
Yeah, we will talk about some more of the things we're looking forward to this year when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You're with your baby. And AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branches on the line, and we've been talking about some of the horror movies that we're looking most forward to this year. And I got to say, I'm doing this in the perspective of leaning into like songs from horror movies of the past. There's just something about that like 80s hair metal songs from 80s horror movies, and not that Alice Cooper I would say is hair metal, he's more glam, but he definitely like in the 80s went into that hair metal vibe with songs like that one and Poison and Feed My Frankenstein, things like that. And then of course we were rocking with Dokken on the last segment, so because that was always the phrase anytime you mentioned Dokken, it was, we're rocking with Dokken.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, Jeremy, I know there's a movie coming out this weekend, and I don't know if you had a chance to see it yet, but that I know you were excited about, and that's Drop.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I've been seeing a lot of trailers for it over the past, 2 months or something like that, and I like the actress, Megan
Faye?
Yes. And she was featured in season 2 of White Lotus, was very, very good in that. She's popped up in some other things since then. But this is one of those cases where it can go really well or really bad or right in the middle. It can really have any potential outcome. But there's something about the concept, this high concept of a girl going on her first date, leaving a child at home. She's a single mother. When she gets to the date, there's some sort of intruder at her house that's kind of bargaining with her, forcing her to do these things. And it's almost a very Hitchcockian setup. Blumhouse is so spotty with their track record, but I really like the director, Christopher Landon, who did Freaky and Happy Death Day. So, I have confidence in this, and I'm hoping it's just a good, tight, little, fun 90-minute thriller. What do you think?
Yeah, and you know, the title referring to the way they're doing this is by doing airdrops to our phone, which I think is, you know, certainly a modern twist, if nothing else. I don't know, man. I'm a little iffy on the trailers for this movie. I'm a little iffy on the hit or miss record on Blumhouse.
Yeah, so no, both fair.
There's a reason I haven't rushed out to see it just yet, but you know, we'll see.
Do you know who wrote it?
Not off the top of my head, but let's find out. It is
Jillian Jacobs and Christopher Roach.
Okay, but not Jillian Jacobs from Community. That's a different Jillian.
It's
Jacobs.
Not?
No, because she spells it.
Come on.
She spells it with a G. So no.
Oh, well.
It's not Adam Eve from Invincible. Nice try, though.
That's too bad.
And it's produced by Michael Bay, so that's a strike against it. But
a strike against it. Some people might say a strike for it. He did that one good movie.
Really? Which one?
The Rock.
Really? Which one?
The Bad Boys, the original Bad Boys. All right, whatever. Move on.
I guess I got to give you that one.
You got to give me original Bad Boys. Oh man.
Yeah, I suppose.
You sound like Phil.
Which means shout nothing to Phil, anybody man. That's listening. But all right, let's move on to a filmmaker that I think has a better track record than Michael Bay. I think is more than fair to say. Guillermo del Toro.
Heard of him.
Huge fan of Guillermo del Toro. Pretty much have loved everything the man has ever done. And he is finally making a version of Frankenstein. This is going to be for Netflix. It's going to come out towards the end of the year. So I don't know that we're going to get a theatrical on this because Netflix doesn't usually do, other than like a qualifying run for Oscars, doesn't usually do a theatrical. But they'll probably do, you know, like I said, a qualifying for the Oscars, but they won't wide release it theatrical. Although I guess they are bowing to that for the Narnia movie that they're making with Greta Gerwig, and they're actually going to do a theatrical IMAX release on that. That's a horror movie, but you know, so maybe they do that with Guillermo too. I would love it. I would love to see this on the big screen. But I mean, killer cast, man: Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Mia Goth, Lars Mikkelsen, David Bradley, Charles Dance, Christoph Waltz. Come on, dude. There's no way this isn't awesome.
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect. And yes, Frankenstein is well adapted. We've seen several different iterations in varying degrees of accuracy and varying degrees of quality. But if you look at Del Toro's oeuvre, I think that's how you say it, oeuvre. if you look at his oeuvre, he is very apt to do this movie. Think about something like Crimson Peak. Think about something like The Shape of Water. This is really so in his wheelhouse and so specific to his style that I don't think you can miss with this movie with that cast. I'm very excited, Julio. And while we're on the topic of that, we got to touch on the fact that there's also a Bride movie coming out. I don't know for sure if it's this year, but
no,
got a couple in development at the same time.
It was originally scheduled for this year, but it's been pushed back to 2026. It's Maggie Gyllenhaal directing that, and I'm very interested in that too. Obviously, completely separate projects that are not tied to each other than that they're both related to the Frankenstein mythos. But not directly tied to each other. Del Toro has been trying to make this movie since 2007.
I didn't know that.
This has been a passion project of his for years. So, I'm just so happy for him that he's finally been able to do this. He really wanted to, the script that ended up becoming Kenneth Branagh's version of Frankenstein in 2008, he was interested in that. And that movie, you know, had its pluses and its minuses in fairness. But he was going to make this at Universal. It was part of a 3-picture deal. He was going to do that. And he was going to do the litany of films that Guillermo del Toro was going to do that didn't materialize is insane.
It really is. It's like a CVS receipt worth of projects that he would have been great for.
In that same time period, he was going to do Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Again, come on. He was going to do, he was going to do Slaughterhouse-Five, which I'm a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan. Would love to see Del Toro try his hand at Kurt Vonnegut. He was going to do Drood, which is, of course, based on the Charles Dickens, The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at one point, he was going to do a DC movie that was going to be Justice League Dark with all of the horror-oriented characters. Would have killed to see that. But, you know, here we are. But, you know, when he does make a movie, it's always an event. It's always worth seeing. And this is probably one of my most anticipated films of 2025, horror or otherwise. Here for it. Anytime Guillermo's got something out, I'm there for it. And I'm gonna be here for it for this one too. What's another one you're really looking forward to here, Jeremy?
So there's something that you mentioned earlier in the show, and I think it is such a important thing to touch on, and that is that like your anticipation for movies that aren't necessarily just follow-ups to franchises that are already kind of tested and well known and stuff like that. And I find that year after year, you and I are both just surprised by the movies that we didn't see coming. Like, I don't know that Substance was on my list of most anticipated movies, and Nora certainly wasn't. And then, lo and behold, some of the best movies of the year are the ones that we never saw coming. That said, when it is a franchise that you know, I think it's easier to be excited about it, curious about it, anticipating it, because you have a kind of a base for, comparison and things like that.
Sure.
So I think we could probably run a whole list of sequels and franchise movies that have follow-ups that are coming out in the following year, but I don't know if you want to do it now or if you want to hold off till after the
break. Well, we can do it. We can quickly run through, and then let's quickly run through, and then when we come back from the break, we'll talk about the ones that we might actually be excited about. But some of the ones that I'm seeing, we're going to get a third A Quiet Place, which I guess is technically a fourth A Quiet Place, but it's A Quiet Place Part 3, since we had the prequel. We're getting a new version of Anaconda that looks like it's going to lean into the comedy. We are going to get... there's another Saw movie coming this year. There's another Fear Street movie coming this year. Final Destination Bloodlines, Five Nights at Freddy's 2. We've got, I didn't even know there were two previous Human Hibachi movies, but apparently we're getting Human Hibachi 3.
I'll Never Forget What You Did Last Summer is coming out July 18th.
Oh, have they finally determined that that's what the title's going to be on that?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Okay, so we got that. We've already talked about Megan Part 2 or 2.0, whatever they're going to call it. You know, the one that I'm maybe most excited about, two that maybe I'm most excited about, is we're getting a second Thanksgiving, and we're getting a long-awaited new Silent Night, Deadly Night, which those movies are just garbage, but they're my garbage. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are talking about our most anticipated horror movies of 2025. And we were talking before the break, Jeremy, about how there's a certain amount of excitement that comes in for franchises, and we talked about some of these franchises that have returning movies and new movies coming up this year. I want to throw that one out there as one that we are way overdue to revisit.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that there are a lot of rights issues, and that's what's held up there being any kind of new Killer Clowns from Outer Space come out. I could tell you there's definitely the demand out there. There's a lot of fans of this movie. And there's been a video game that's been in development that was supposed to have come out late last year and is just keeps getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. Man, I would love to see the Chiodo brothers get to do another Killer Clowns movie.
You know what I like about Killer Clowns is that it feels like one of those movies that wasn't acknowledged for the fun and the brilliant practical effects and all of the kind of just quirkiness that it has in it until more recently. I feel like it's one that has like aged well and people have a greater appreciation for it now than they did, say, 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, camp and, you know, low budget and, you know, everything that you could possibly say about it. But it's just also so much fun.
It's fun, yeah.
And I just don't know how you don't dig that one. It's, you know, and it's, you know, John Allen Nelson just delivering that immortal line, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Not John Allen Nelson, John Vernon. It was John Vernon. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Holy. Can't say the rest of the line.
Yeah.
It's up there with Garbage Day.
But not up there, because like you have mentioned, greatest line read of all time is Garbage Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. So we rattled off a bunch of franchises before the break, and I know that there's some of those that you're particularly excited about, Jeremy, or maybe some that we didn't even mention that you're particularly excited about coming back in 2025. What in particular are you looking forward to?
So for me, it's Final Destination Bloodlines. I'm not like a huge fan of the franchise and actually came onto it much, much later, like within the last couple of years. I watched most of them, but seeing this teaser trailer got me super hyped for it. I'm not sure if there's a full-length trailer out, but the trailer that I saw specifically sets up the death of a tattoo artist as he's like closing down his parlor. It's very, very elaborate, and it gives me the impression that they're going to focus on just really over-the-top death accident sequences, and I think that's long been part of the appeal of the franchise. Plus, Tony Todd's got an appearance in it, so to see him return to that role, in particular post-mortem, I think is nice. I'm just such a huge fan of him. So, like, I'm looking forward to Final Destination Bloodlines. By no means am I saying it's going to be great, but I'm intrigued, Julio. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the set pieces are why you go see those movies, because there's not, like, a real, like, villain, per se, in those movies.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting. And it will, of course, be Tony Todd's final role. You know, he unfortunately no longer with us. So I think in that in and of itself, and he was a consistent presence in those movies. So I'm glad to, you know, to see that his last work is going to get out there, because Tony was just such a good guy. Any of these other franchises that you're particularly excited about? I mean, I think for me, kind of already mentioned the ones that I'm kind of excited about. I'm not so excited about them that I'm like, ooh, can't wait. What about you? I think you're a big I Know What You Did Last Summer fan, if I'm not mistaken.
So, you know, I'm a 90s kid, and I acknowledge that it was one of those post-Scream franchises that kind of tried to recapture the magic of the 80s slasher. Didn't quite do it as well. I don't have any hope in this movie being good, but I kind of am curious about it, just because it's one of those 90s horror franchises that has, in the same way Killer Clowns from Outer Space has grown, I think a lot of people have a fondness for the originals, despite them not really being all that good. What about you?
I know I saw the first one. I couldn't tell you anything that I remember about it. I know that we've got
Freddy. Jennifer Love Hewitt in a wet tank top spinning around saying, "What are you waiting for?"
You know,
you at least remember that.
Honestly, she's never been like one of my dream girls. Like, she's all not right, ugly.
We'll move on.
She's not ugly, don't get me wrong, but like, she's just not been one that I've been like, oh man, Jennifer. Like, and I remember, like, at the time, everyone was like, oh, Jennifer Love Hewitt. It's like, eh. Yeah.
All right. Sarah Michelle Gellar was in it.
She was. And that, I think that's probably why I saw it. Yeah, that's, I mean, that and Scooby-Doo are what got her and Freddie Prinze Jr. together, and they're still together. So if nothing else,
yeah.
You know, it's
sweet.
Good for them on that. Yeah. I mean, look at the original. Yeah, you talked about them, but Ryan Phillippe also in there, Johnny Galecki, Anne Heche. Mm-hmm. You know, good cast. It was based on a really popular young A novel that I think I read when I was a kid. Yeah.
Is it R.L. Stein? Because if not, it should be.
No, it was Lois Duncan. Who Lois Duncan was like R.L. Stein before there was an R.L. Stein. She wrote a lot of
Sounds like it.
She wrote a lot of like young adult horror. She also wrote Killing Mr. Griffin, which was made into a movie. Summer of Fear, also made into a movie. And not in that vein, but Hotel for Dogs, which has also been made into a movie. So
I just admitted to not having been a big Final Destination fan until more recently. I don't think you've ever been on the Saw train in particular.
I have seen one Saw movie. I saw the first Saw movie, and I was done.
I think that Saw 10 is probably the best of all of the Saw movies, which is insane. I realize what a crazy statement that sounds like. I like the first one a lot, but this is another franchise, similarly, that I saw the first one when it came out. I liked it. I saw the second one. I was not a fan. Thought it was very cheap and just not my vibe at the time. I've since went and watched all of them. They're very middle of the road. I like what they do to kind of maintain continuity and the way each of them ties to the previous in surprising ways. But Saw 10 was good enough. And I'm actually pretty excited about Saw 11. I hope that it continues that upward trend that they've recently been on.
I mean, I respect that it's a franchise that has a lot of fans. I respect a lot of the actors that have been involved with the franchise, but like, the franchise has just never appealed to me. I wasn't happy with the first one and never saw the need to go back. And even in that first one, there were people that, you know, in that film that I really like. Yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
That first one wants you to believe that Michael Emerson's the villain until the very end.
And it was a good calling card for both James Wan and Lee Whannell, who have went on to do really good work, respectively.
Well, and I think, you know, it pretty much made Tobin Bell's career too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and I will say, you know, we've talked on this show before about horror icons. You know, he has absolutely become indisputably a horror icon from Saw.
Absolutely.
Jigsaw is, I mean, however I feel about the franchise, you can't deny that Jigsaw is absolutely a horror icon.
I think that the grabber from The Black Phone with that iconic mask portrayed by Ethan Hawke could potentially enter that pantheon. I hope they don't do a whole ton of these movies, but Scott Derrickson returning for The Black Phone 2 is another one I'm excited about. I thought the first of these was surprisingly good, and in that Blumhouse studio label that we're a little wary of these days, or a little unsure of these days, Black Phone was elevated in a way that few horror movies are, like mainstream horror movies are, and I think the Black Phone 2 has a lot of potential.
Yeah, it's interesting that there does seem to be kind of this move to try to create, you know, we've talked about where's the new generation of horror icons, and as much as I want to see, you know, there's a big bidding war going on right now for the Texas Chainsaw rights. As much as I would like to see, you know, we're going to get a Crystal Lake series to see Jason coming back at some point.
Did you see the Pamela Voorhees casting?
I did. Linda Cardellini. That's very interesting to me.
Let's go. Let's go.
You know, I'm waiting for somebody to do something with Freddy Krueger, but I think that we do need to create some new icons. And I think there's been kind of an attempt at that lately with movies like this and Happy Death Day with the baby face mask and Hard Eyes, mm-hmm. with the mask and that, like there seems to be a movement to try to bring those iconography back. And I am here for that as a whole. What do you think about, and I haven't, this has just come out too, and I haven't had a chance to see it yet. hell of a summer. Finn Wolfhard directing, writing and directing.
Yeah, right? At best, I think what we could get is The Final Girls, which came out, I guess, several years ago now, but it was a really fun kind of send up to the slasher genre, which this one very much looks to be split right down the middle, horror, comedy. I certainly don't think The Mask is iconic in the way that you and I are discussing, like, which of these iconographies is going to stand the test of time, but it does look fun. What do you think?
I'm a little iffy. It could go either way. It could be really fun, or it could be really dumb, or it could be really dumb fun. But, you know, Finn Wolfhard, DeFaro Wunderti from Reservation Dogs, I got to at least give it a chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with that, we're going to go try to watch some of these movies. We'll be back next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.